If we choose them, shouldn't we be able to banish them? The questions were scrolling through my head again as I sat in a meeting room, watching Mel generate a virtual walkthrough of a big box retail store. He was explaining how customer traffic would flow, how the layout allowed for excellent point-of-sale potential. He laughed and said, "It's about capturing those impulse buys." Leaning across the table, he inclined his head toward the Japanese contingent on the client side, as if he were sharing valuable trade secrets with them. "Of course, we all know that 66% of buying decisions are made in the store, and of those, 53% are pure impulse buys. Our research shows that, with this layout, your percentages could increase to..." He paused, looked down at his notes, tapped the tabletop with his pencil. I was only vaguely aware of the glitch in his presentation. I'd had the Moses Lake dream again last night. The past was floating in front of me like a cellophane overlay, scenes dripping and blending with the reflections from the conference room windows. It was raining outside again, typical for Seattle, not the best weather for a critical presentation that could mean millions. I dreamed all the way to putting my hand on the cellar doorknob last night. I'd curled up on a yoga mat behind my desk to catch a couple hours' sleep before the office came to life, and suddenly there were the doors, the white ones, then the brown one. It had been a while since I'd seen the door, maybe a year or more since I'd awakened with a start and moved through the day, wondering what really happened at the bottom of those cellar steps.
"Heather, did you pull together the rest of that research?"
Mal glanced my way expectantly, as if he hadn't already been given the numbers. My boss was slipping. 7 years ago, when I'd started at CTI, Mel was a lion. "Sure, of course." I flipped through the paperwork to save face for Mel. In reality, the numbers and I were on intimate terms. "The consumer research indicates a potential 17% increase in impulse purchases as compared with your existing stores. Considering that we're discussing stores that are already running at a brisk average of $350 in gross sales per square foot, that increase would be..." Mal caught my eye and gave me a look that warned me not to start running calculations in my head and spouting figures. This was his meeting. Letting the papers settle back into place, I finished with, "Significant, of course." Mal took over again, but two of the principals were clearly more interested in hard facts than Mal's sales talk about environments that perform and brand iconography. Mal was pushing hard, borderline desperate, but after 7 years of paddling in the man's wake, I understood his nuances. It was hard to know how to feel, sitting there watching him struggle to revive the old magic. On the one hand, he had plucked me off the bottom rung of the ladder. On the other hand, every time I tried to climb the ladder, Mel's foot was squarely on my head. I wanted to move up, to eventually achieve what he had achieved, project leader, junior partner, partner. I'd never get there with Mel in the way. My cell phone vibrated in my pocket. I slid it out and glanced while everyone was watching virtual customers move through checkout lanes. The customers started at a normal pace, then gradually sped up, buzzing by like bumblebees exiting a hive, having sacrificed nectar for shopping carts filled with 53%+ impulse buys. They were moving so fast, they never even knew what hit them. The text message was from Richard. "Problem. Call me ASAP." The phone vibrated with an incoming call as I was tucking it away. Surely that wasn't Richard. He knew how long these meetings could take. One advantage of dating a guy who was in the real estate business was that he understood. When clients come to town, the clients come first. I took a peek at the screen. I didn't recognize the number, but I knew the area code, 510, California. My mother, undoubtedly. Suddenly, Richard's text message made sense. My foot vibrated under the table as the meeting worked toward a close. When it was over, I gathered my files and politely excused myself from the room. Somehow, Mel and I ended up on the elevator together anyway.
"They left quickly."
He leaned into the corner, his head falling against the wall as if he couldn't hold it up one more second. "It was a long meeting, but we both knew what a quick exit usually meant. They won't find a more comprehensive proposal than ours, though."
"Let's hope."
His eyes slowly closed, like he was already trying to figure out how he'd survive if we didn't get the Sitega contract. The doors opened. Watching him there, crumpled against the wall, I felt the need to say something more. I held the doors open with the button so as not to be ferried to the executive suites along with Mel.